Hey, everybody, this is Michael Sweet from Striper, and you are listening to Focus on Metal.
Hey, Metalheads, Scott here.
I'm Richie.
And, of course, you are listening once again to Focus on Metal. And you actually scored a pretty cool guest once again here on the show. So how many times have we had Michael Sweet on? Is this the third or fourth time?
It's the third time.
So, of course, they've got the brand new album out by Sweet and Lynch.
Only to Royce.
And I know a lot of the shows have had George on, and we managed to get Michael on. And I'm actually pretty freaking happy about that.
Well, I was hoping to get Michael on because he's released a lot.
Yeah.
And I touch on that in the interview. We had him on for Second Coming and No More Hell to Pay, which were both released, their Striper albums, in 2013. And then in 2014, he had I'm Not Your Suicide solo album and a great book, Honestly. And towards the end of the year, they had Live at the Whiskey. Striper had a live album.
Right.
And now he has this album coming out.
Yeah.
Sweet Lynch, Only to Rise. So you're talking between November 2013 and now, he's had two studio albums, one solo album and a book.
Right.
And a live album. That's pretty prolific.
It is, yeah. But another theme too that kind of has carried through with a couple of our interviews we've done lately is the fact of, you know, all these folks being on frontiers. And of course, the name keeps coming up, Serafino, who is, you know, the big head honcho at Frontiers. And you got to wonder with all the kind of, you know, superstar matchups and things that run through his head and all the stuff he does, like, does that guy ever even sleep? I mean, we know Michael doesn't, but like, he's come up with some amazing crap lately. I mean, we just had Jolynn Turner on and Serafino was the impetus behind that.
Yeah.
When we talked to Reb Beach, he mentioned about having for the Mob. Again, Serafino pops up there.
Well, he's trying to get him to do another Mob record.
You know, this guy's got a really cool pulse on things, and he's also just put some amazing crap together lately.
He does. And yeah, I've heard a Revolution Saints record. That's really good too, by the way. That's Doug Aldrich, Jack Blades, and Dean Castronova from Journey, who's singing on it as well. And he's a fantastic singer. But the supergroup thing, there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
There really is a lot of them. We enjoyed the KXM record.
Yeah.
No shows. They seem to be coming around a lot. I'll tell you another one now is who's pretty prolific on this thing is Russell Allen.
Yeah.
And Yorn Land.
Yeah.
They had Allen Land.
Yeah.
And I believe Russell Allen has an album coming out at the end of this month with Matt Sinner.
Yes.
And he has an album coming out in February with Adrenaline Mob.
Yeah.
And I was actually a couple of days ago, I was nearly going to write down a list of all these bands' names and we'll have a quiz and say, who's in that band? Who's in that band? Just to see if you could remember. And I can't keep track of them.
Yeah.
I really can't.
I think we come at it in a different way than just like the average person out there that, you know, if you're a Jolynn Turner fan and you really haven't followed anything else, but you hear, oh, Jolynn Turner's got this new project out. You've probably bought a lot of the other projects that Joe was on. So you pick up Rated X and go, wow, this is pretty good. And you may not know really who the other guys are.
Mm-hmm.
You might not even care. I mean, granted they're big names on there, but you're buying it for that one reason. I mean, you think of the Winery Dogs. There's a bunch of people who are Dream Theater fans who are buying it for Portnoy.
Yeah.
You know, they're just Portnoy fans and going, okay, well, this is what Mike's doing. I'm going to get it. You know, you've got a whole other crowd that are Sheehan fans, and that's what they're getting it for.
When you look at the Winery Dogs, who got the biggest kudos from that was Richie Kotzen.
Yeah.
People couldn't believe how good a singer he was. He had all these solo albums out that are, you know, good. They're really good albums.
Sure.
But he was really under the radar for many years. He was in, you know, people know him from being in Poison for an album.
So under the radar that even Reb didn't know. That was one of my favorite parts of that interview, by the way, though. Yeah. When he's like, well, guitar is singing. Both of us together.
Richie Kotzen. Yeah.
And the fact that Richie's from PA as well,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, true. But he definitely got the biggest push. Now, the Winery Dogs are going in to do another record.
Yeah.
And they did tour a lot. I'll hand it to them. But they are one of the few who's toured a lot.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of these bands, these so-called supergroups. And they're great musicians. Serafino gets them together. How does he know it's going to work?
He's got an amazing instinct.
Halfway through that, do you think any of them would turn around and say, I'm out of here, this is crap? Or do you think they all have to go through with it now that they've all signed on for it? Because you never know. You know, a lot of these guys, they're comfortable with the bands that they've been in for a long time, yeah, or with these musicians that they've played with.
But he's also been doing this with a lot of bands out of Europe, too. It's been more that lately there's been a lot more of these that have been made up of more of the American-centric bands than a lot of the other part of the frontier stable in Europe. I mean, he's been doing this for a while. So, you know, and you see it with, you know, things that like, you know, with Timo Tolki being on this and mm-hmm. on that, and you know, and pulling in this female singer and that female singer, and you know, all that kind of stuff. So he's been doing it for a while. See, whenever I think about supergroup, I think about you call it a supergroup because it's like this. It's this big entity, this supergroup. Where these, I don't really consider them to be supergroup. I just consider them to be more. They could be a project. They could be, you know, Joe really was kind of keen on it's a band that it's not advertised as this, you know, just all this awesome players coming together thing. It's really this band, you know, maybe the Sweet Lynch one is a little bit different just because of the names, you know, it's Sweet and Lynch. Now you got into that with Michael in the interview as well, but that's one of these ones where, you know, the marquee names get put right up front and it's more apparent, you know, of it. Maybe not to the point of, you know, old school stuff like HSAS when that was, you know, to me, that was a supergroup, you know?
Yeah. But when you think of supergroups like that, another one that comes to me in the melodic rock field, Bad English, Neil Sean, Jonathan Cain, John Waite, and, who else was in that? Ricky Phillips and, the drummer, Journey, Dean
Castronova.
Yeah. Right. There weren't many of them then.
No.
They stuck out. Now they're to a penny. And the sum of the parts never equal what you hope to get.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's that one. And then what's with...
See, here we go. We're already forgetting the names.
with Nugent.
Damn Yankees.
Damn Yankees, thank you. Again, that one was really put out there as a super group.
Yeah.
You know, and not so much the project. You know, I think a lot of these are, I don't know, I don't really like to call them supergroups because they don't, you know, no one out there is going out and saying that, you know, Rated X is, and, you know, naming all the players and all that. It's just kind of, you know, Carmine might mention it, or, you know, Joe's obviously going out and promoting it or whatever, but it's kind of just been the band and not like just conglomeration of cool players. I don't know. It just, to me, it has a different feel.
Yeah. You see,
but I also like some of these ones that come out. You know, what was that one one of the last ones that Janie Lane worked on?
Saints of the Underground.
Saints of the Underground.
Bobby Blotzer. Yeah.
And that, to me, that was one of these kind of ones, right? It wasn't really a super group or whatever.
Yeah, you're going back 7 or 8 years here, maybe even more. Now there's one along every 7 or 8 minutes.
Sure.
I just think there's too many of them. Do a show.
Yeah.
Honestly, if Serafino is getting these bands together, they should do at least one showcase. Mm-hmm. Do one show and then say, look, we've done a show. And you could even put the show on YouTube, say, look, we're not a project, we're a band. We're all in the same room playing together.
I guess part of it too, right, is when Saints came out, it was still, I mean, the record sales weren't massive, but they were still sold pretty decent. At that point, you know, it wasn't as low as it is now. I think part of this is trying to capture some market share, maybe generate some interest somewhere as well.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely. I just think that as a fan, what are we investing in? How can we invest in something like this the way we invested in their main bands? I don't think we can.
Well, because you can.
We know they're not going to... They mightn't be around tomorrow.
Right.
Like, the KXM record is good.
Yeah.
But I'm a big Lynch fan. I don't really know much about Ray Lousier. I'm a massive King's X fan.
Yeah.
And they haven't played one show.
Right.
So I'm like... What am I investing in? I've bought your album. And then you've some of the guys might come along and say, oh, there's no money in CD sales. And we scheduled the time to make the record. And now Ray might say, I'm off playing with Korn. I don't have time anymore. And it's like, well, what am I doing here?
Well, for some of these, I just look at it as a, something cool to listen to. Oh, okay. That's how this would sound with these guys playing together. Well, it's a cool album. And I leave it at that.
Yeah.
You know, and this other, you know, I know that Primal Fear will come out with another album.
Mm-hmm.
I'm invested in them.
Yeah.
I know Matt Sinner will come out with another Sinner album. I'm invested in that. But, you know, if Matt goes and he plays with somebody else, I'll probably buy that album and be like, oh, well, that sounds pretty cool. And it's just the love of music.
But you hit it in the nail on the head there. It sounds pretty cool. It doesn't blow you away, though.
Some of the stuff does.
Yeah, but how much are you going to spend to find the 5% that'll blow you away?
Well.
Okay. I'm looking behind you.
I got this pile here.
Well, so do I. Yeah, but I think a lot of the times you go with what you know.
Well, I think part of it too, right? That's part of the thing of why people listen, right?
Yeah.
Is they go, oh, we're going to let those idiots spend their money and then tell us what sounds, you know, if they like it or not, mm-hmm. maybe give us a sample and maybe we can hear from the artist and maybe go out and spend the money. So,
yeah. The Sweet Lynch record now, it's good. It's a good record. I'm not knocking it. I'm not saying it's crap.
Yeah.
I'm just saying for me, there's too many of these now.
Yeah.
And they just record the record. They release the record and within a week or 2 weeks, it's gone. And that's the end of it. And then... In a couple of months' time, Serafino will pair him up with someone else. They'll make an album. The album will be pretty good, maybe really good, could be great. And within a week or 2 weeks, they're gone. And then they'll be on to someone else.
Well, you know, it's hard for them too, right? The promotional budgets are nothing. Touring is expensive. If you're Michael Sweet, what are you going to do? Are you going to take your money and invest in a Striper tour?
I'm not knocking the musicians. I think they do their best with what they can do at the time.
Yeah.
But it has to be in the back of their mind that, look, I asked Michael what's his definition of success for this record, because before the success was you had a gold album, you had a platinum album.
Yeah.
Now it's just getting the bloody thing made
mm-hmm.
and out there is successful.
Yeah.
There's so many different ways of doing it now. I think if they had to all... If they all had to get in the same room and take time out and record this thing, that none of them would get out of anywhere, because the musicians would go, I can't do that. I'm off my main band. I don't have time to do this. They're doing it piecemeal. They're doing it over 6-8 months, sending bits of songs here and then they're finishing them there.
Yeah.
And then they come out with a record. They don't actually say like, right, here's like, remember in the 80s, they're like, right, here we are 8 months.
Yeah.
We're in the studio for 8 months. That's gone.
Oh yeah,
gone. Those days are gone.
Yeah, well, you can't afford studio time like that anymore, and no one's got that kind of time either. I mean, it's not like you're coming off a cycle where you've sold a crap load of records, and you've got money, or you've got a big advance or whatever else. It's like I got to feed the family.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things we didn't touch on when you mentioned the Winery Docks, they're not on Frontiers.
No.
Maybe that has something. I'm not saying it directly has something to do with it, but they're on, I think it's, I can't remember the name, Loud and Proud, I think it is. And I think they deliberately went out and took time out of their schedule to get this band going.
Uh-huh.
They toured a lot. And I saw them live. They were excellent.
Yeah.
I thought they were excellent. They're making a new record. I just think one of these bands might actually do something and they won't be able to play because they're all buggering off to play with their other bands. I'm telling you, it'll happen to one of them.
Yeah.
And they'll miss the boat.
No.
or the other thing is, why doesn't Serafino get all these bands on one bill?
Yeah, I mean, there's always, European festivals.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Get Revolution Saints out with Rated X.
Yeah.
With Sweet Lynch. and get them all out on the one tour.
Mm-hmm.
You would have a huge cross section. They're all in the same genre. They're all in the melodic rock genre. I think people would definitely pay to go and see that. All those musicians on the one bill?
Maybe.
You think so?
Maybe.
Why? Why do you not think so?
I mean, look at some of the shows that we've gone to where it's a fantastic bill, and you look around and go, why isn't this place full? Tickets weren't expensive. Why isn't this place full?
Mm. But you know that this is a one-off, though.
Yeah, even with that, I just think there's definitely going to be enough people that are just going to go, no, it's too far, it's too this, it's too that.
You bloody Americans, you're all the bloody same. You won't you won't walk down to get a coffee 5 minutes down the road. The bloody drive everywhere. Drive me mad, you do. I've traveled over here to go to see gigs. I don't care.
Yeah, I know. Can't even argue with you about that one.
I know. I just think that for something like that now, I'd definitely go see. The only thing I wouldn't want it to be is a greatest hits package.
Yeah.
Where all the bands come out and, you know, Carmine does the, Rod Stewart and Joe does Rainbow. Because they've only got 45 minutes each. I don't want two Rated X songs and then six greatest hit songs.
Right.
And then, Revolution Saints come out, Doug does, one or two Whitesnake songs and Jack does, Sister Christian. I'd be like, oh, come on, really? And then, anyway.
All right. So anyways, when we go ahead, we'll dive in with a track of the week, and then we will come back with Michael Sweet. All right, track of the week time. And of course, earlier in the show, Richie had been talking all about the supergroups, as he calls them. Well, I guess not just him, a bunch of people call them supergroups. And we had the discussion about what is and what isn't. And I just, by coincidence, happen to have a track of the week this week from something that Richie would definitely consider to be a supergroup. I'm talking, of course, about the band Level 10. And if you haven't heard of these guys yet, it's another one of these ones that Frontiers put together. Serafino just kind of doing his magic again. He just kind of, as I guess the whole idea was to kind of take some of the aggressive sound of Adrenaline Mob and then take some of the traditional European power metal kind of a thing from Primal Fear. And he put together this band, Level 10. Of course, it's got Russell Allen on lead and backing vocals, Matt Sinner on bass and vocals, Roland Grappo on guitars, Alex Byrott also on guitars, Randy Black coming in on drums and percussion, and Alessandro Del Vecchio on keyboard. So an all-star band there of people, kind of like I said, it's Primal Fear meets Adrenaline Mob, and just a great aggressive power metal sounding album. Lots of good tracks on here, and they kind of run the gamut of stuff as well. With some of the there's some of the more melodic stuff. Then there's tracks like Demonized, which kind of have more of that fast kind of Judas Priest sound that some of the Primal Fear albums have, but just with a real darker sense of them, with Russell Allen on vocals rather than Ralph Sheepers, kind of a different sounding thing going on there. So very cool album, I would have to say, and lots of good tracks I could play you and stuff. And initially I was thinking about actually doing the Demonized track, but I didn't want to have everyone thinking that that's what the whole album sounded like. And I thought that probably one of the best representative tracks of the whole thing is the first track right out of the gate, just kind of grabs you and sucks you right into the album. And that track is called Cry No More. So from the debut album from Level 10, album's called Chapter 1. It's out now on Frontier Records. This is Cry No More.
Set me free, my child. If I dare to call you friend,
All right, there you go. Track of the week. And, of course, Richie was able to scare up our interview with Michael Sweet. And I have to fall on my sword and admit that I forgot to record the first 3 minutes of the interview.
Yeah, I don't get to do...
I think I do that about twice a year.
I don't get to do them solo very often. I forget the first 3 minutes. I'm ashamed.
Yeah. You know. Richie shows up. I say, yep, I'm going to let you do this one all by yourself.
Well, nearly was all by myself.
I'm just going to man the board. And then my one job, manning the board, and I fucked up.
Ronnie Monroe, we did it.
I was checking. Michael's level was kind of low. I'm like, I got to bring up the level. And I'm doing it. And I'm like, I'm not recording. So we kind of, what was the beginning? We just kind of the pleasantries. Hey, how you doing? All that. And then you just kind of were asking about the... How did he schedule the whole schedule out? Yeah.
How did he schedule it? Because these things are, they take forever.
Yeah.
Because they're Striper, I think they were just back from Brazil and they probably played somewhere and did a live record out, and Michael's been busy with his book and he's writing songs with Veronica Freeman he's writing the new Striper record. And
so we're going to do our 3 minute simulcast version and cut right into the Michael Sweet thing. So go ahead, Richie. Start the interview.
So how did you schedule this, Michael?
No, you got to go all the way to the beginning.
Oh, I can't remember the beginning.
You said, how you doing?
No, I can't remember the beginning. You never recorded it.
Oh, jeez. And my balls get busted once again.
I'm getting old. I can't remember things anymore.
Yeah, so basically that's what it was. It was just, you know, hey, how's it going, whatever, which we kind of know because we don't live that far from Michael either, so we know what things are like. So Richie basically was, you know, you're a busy guy, how'd you get all this scheduled? And we'll cut right into Michael's answer to that question.
It was easy to kind of plan it out because it was so far in advance. And the record's been basically done for quite a while. We started recording the album in January of last year.
Yeah.
So, we're talking about a year almost since we started recording it. So it's easy when there's enough time to plan everything out.
Yeah.
It's definitely a lot less difficult than when you drop the bomb and, you know, it's like you got a week or two or a month or something like that. That would be hard.
Okay, so when you were writing for this, were you writing specifically for this record or do you just write music?
No, I was writing specifically for this album. I mean, I told George what I was thinking and he agreed and he sent me some guitar riff ideas and then I took those and ran with it.
Yeah.
And he sent me more and he sent me, I think, four at a time. Until I had enough ideas, and then I kind of tweaked everything and added sections that weren't there and made them complete songs because they were just minute and a half long ideas.
Okay.
But no, it was definitely with this record in mind specifically, absolutely.
Okay, now you're someone, if you look at the Striper records and the credits on your solo stuff, you write the bulk of the music and the lyrics alone. Does collaborating come easy for you?
It does. I mean, I've certainly spent my time over the years co-writing, and I love it. I enjoy it. Most recently on my solo album, I co-wrote with Blair Daly a song called I'm Not Your Suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Nashville and wrote with Blair, and he's an awesome guy and an incredibly talented writer. And I love doing that. I guess I'm real picky about who I write with, though.
Yeah.
You know, I won't write with just anyone. You know, there's got to be a respect, a mutual respect there, and we've got to get along and share the same views to a degree. And at the same time, you know, I want them to be a really established, superb writer.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like feeling like I'm spinning my wheels or wasting my time, and I've been there and done that as well.
Okay. Now, do you have a long history with George before? Did you play with Dokken or maybe with Lynch Mob in the past?
Played with Lynch Mob, not Dokken, but George came and saw Striper years ago in the 80s in Phoenix. And then I hadn't seen him in years, and we wound up crossing paths again when Striper played with Lynch Mob a few years ago.
Okay.
And we just really hit it off, you know, exchanged information, and I really like George as a person. I love his playing. He's always been on my top 10 guitar list of players, mm-hmm. no doubt.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always felt like that was a little bit of a bucket list for me. He was on my bucket list to perform with George to some degree, and I wound up making an album with him. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Now, is there any particular track on this where when George sent you an idea that just completely blew you away?
Oh, gosh. There were quite a few.
Okay.
I mean, again, I got riffs.
Yeah.
I didn't get words. I didn't get melodies. I just got guitar.
Mm-hmm.
The one that instantly grabbed me a few were, it was a song called, the song that's now Love Stays,
mm-hmm.
and then Dying Rose. You know, those were songs that I instantly gravitated to and thought, wow, these are really cool ideas.
Yeah. Now, lyrically, where did you want to go with this record? Because, of course, with Stryper, it's a Christian rock band. Where did you want to go with this one in particular?
I wanted to stay true to myself and what I do and who I am, and that is, you know, being writing about positive things and trying to encourage people.
Yeah.
I'll never write a dark negative stuff ever.
Okay.
It's not in me. It's not who I am. So I really tried hard to keep it positive and uplifting, but at the same time not preach to people, because this isn't a Christian band. You know, this is a little different project than Stryper.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to go down that road of, you know, writing lyrics that were religious or, you know, had those overtones. But at the same time, you know, I wanted the lyrics to be very encouraging and people to get something out of them and walk away feeling blessed by it or feeling uplifted by having heard the lyric. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. Now, was there any part of the process where you were kind of second-guessing yourself, saying, oh, this sounds a little bit too much like Stryper? Or can you even afford that to even enter your mind?
No, it didn't. It's interesting to read some of the comments from people because, you know, a lot of times people say, oh, it sounds like Stryper. And the song is a song that, you know, George wrote the riff to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, well, this certainly isn't a Stryper song. And I think what happens a lot of times is because I'm singing it, you know, it instantly takes on that vibe or that feel or that sound.
Yeah.
And then if I play guitar on it, you know, I have a certain style of playing, and that's all over Stryper records, you know. And like, for example, the song Recover,
mm-hmm.
or the song The Wish. You know, I play a lot of guitars on both of those songs, and you can hear that.
Yeah.
The Wish has that chunking, driving kind of tone, and sound, and that's a very typical Stryper trademark, you know.
Yeah. Now, was this one of the albums where you collaborated but actually didn't make together in the same studio?
This is an album that we did not. The band itself, James, Brian, and myself, we were in the same studio, but George never was.
Okay.
And it worked, you know.
Yeah, because normally I've seen the videos you've got for the making of the last Stryper album and all the ones before that were. You'd write the songs, you'd get the whole band in, and you'd spend a couple of weeks in the studio as a band recording it, where this one, you only had the three guys, and George was outside. Was that a little bit weird, or do you think, you know, at the time?
It could have been. I was definitely a little nervous about it.
Yeah.
Because I felt like, okay, this could work, or this could not work. Well, fortunately, it worked.
Okay.
And I think the reason why is because it was thrown out the idea of having the other guys track their tracks at their home studios.
Okay.
And I put my foot down. I said, no way. You know, Brian had suggested tracking drums at his house. He said he does it all the time. And I said, no, we need to stick with the plan. You come out here and I'm going to track you so I can produce your drums and produce the bass. And, you know, we could all be in the same room together, feeding off of one another. And that's very important. It was an impossibility for George to do that.
Okay.
But I made sure that at least the rhythm section and myself did that. And I think that comes across. You definitely hear an energy in the tracks, and that's because we were having fun and tracking together.
Yeah.
Now, whose decision was it to get Brian and James to play with you and George?
That was mine.
Okay, okay.
I suggested George. John Levin was the suggestion originally from Serafino.
Okay.
And I'm the one that suggested George.
Okay.
And then I called James and Brian and hired them and put the whole band together.
Okay, great. So you've done something now that a lot of these projects, you know, what they're doing is they're putting a name on it. Like the likes of Rated X is one of them. You've got Doug Aldridge's band next month has an album coming out as well. But you've gone
Revolution.
Yeah. Right. And you've gone for the Sweet Lynch. Did you try and come up with a band name?
I did. George and I did. We played around with a number of names for quite a while. And we actually played around with the name Only to Rise. And we didn't really care for Sweet and Lynch originally.
Okay.
It was suggested Sweet Lynch and, you know, different ways of saying it. And we didn't really personally care for it.
Okay.
But the label, really, for whatever reason, was set on and bent on it being Sweet Lynch. But, yeah, we wanted to come up with a name. I think it would have been a lot cooler to have a name. And I know George feels the same way.
Yeah, yeah. Now, of course, the million-dollar question is live shows. I know you just said you're going back into the studio now to work with Stryper. Do you think there's going to be any live shows in the future for this band?
I think there will be. I don't know how many, and I don't know exactly when, but I think there will be.
Okay.
It'd be a crime not to.
Okay.
You know, we really need to get out and let people hear this music live and see the band live, because it's a great band and some great songs.
Yeah.
It'll be a real treat, you know, to do that. So I'm hoping that it happens.
Yeah.
We're trying very, very hard to make that happen.
Okay. And can you tell us a little bit about, I know you've got a Pledge Music campaign going at the moment as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Usually Pledge, when you think of Pledge or Kickstarter, you think of a company that helps people raise money to fund their project. Well, the project was already funded. So what they're doing now, they're working with a number of bands to promote the project and to offer packages and kind of give it a kick in the pants, you know. And that's what Frontiers is doing. They're working with Pledge on a number of projects. I think they're doing a Revolution Saint project, and I'm sure a lot of their band, Stryper, may be doing one, you know, when our album is available.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just something that Frontiers is doing on a business level, you know, a smart business move to just get the word out to more people and get, you know, the marketing and the promotion campaign itself, taking it to a higher level. That's all.
Okay. You've released a Stryper record, No More Hell to Pay, and a solo album, and a book, and a live album. And now you have Sweet Lynch, and you're going back in the studio to do another Stryper record. Can you overexpose yourself in today's market?
You can. I think it's very important to not confuse people. That's why I stay true to the style that I do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not out trying to make jazz records or, you know, thrash metal records or, you know, I do my solo stuff, and it's pretty much rock, hard rock. And then I do the Stryper stuff, which is hard rock / metal. And the Lynch Suite, Sweet and Lynch, falls right in the same category.
Yeah.
You know, I really stay true, or try to who I am as an artist, and not just lyrically, but also musically. It's very important to me.
Yeah, now we talked to you when you brought out No More Hell to Pay, and you spoke about it being the follow-up to Hell with the Devil. Where do you think you're going to go with Stryper on this album?
I think it's definitely going to be the follow-up to No More Hell to Pay, in the sense that it's going to have similarities. lots of melodies and you know, in your face, hard rock slash metal. The only difference it's going to be with this album is I think it's going to be a little heavier in the sense that it might be a little darker lyrically and a little darker musically.
Okay.
You know, like some of the songs are going to be tuned down, so they're going to have a little more of a chug to them.
Okay.
Kind of like, for an example, the song Save Me that I did on my Truth album.
Okay.
In that vein.
All right.
You know, just chugging and lower. Lyrically, some really powerful stuff on this album.
Okay.
Pretty powerful stuff. So I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised because they might expect us to turn in No More Hell to Pay and then not be able to repeat that. And I think this album is going to repeat that and quite possibly surpass it. And you know what? If we keep going up and keep outdoing ourselves, that's a great place to be in. And I'll take it. I'm real happy with that.
Yeah, well, I thought No More Hell to Pay was a very strong record, very well received.
And I really think this one will be too. I'm getting my gut feeling, and you know, I have nothing to lose. I would tell you, I would say, well, you know what, we got a lot more work to do.
Yeah,
I'm not feeling this album yet, but I really am feeling it, and I'm getting excited about it. I think it's going to be fantastic. The guys come out a week from this Thursday, so it's right around the corner. I've got 4 more songs to work on, and then I've got some tweaks to make to the other 8. There will be 12 tracks, and then there will be a bonus mix track as well. I don't know the title of it yet, but it's definitely going to be in your face, man. People are going
to
love it.
Great. I want to talk to you as well, Michael. You worked on a few tracks recently with Veronica Freeman. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Veronica reached out to me about working with her. She had already completed an album for the most part, but she wanted to kind of take it up to a new level and add some new tracks to it, and I guess improve it a bit. So I wrote 2 songs for her, and I produced those 2 songs. It was on a very limited budget, and there really was no budget. And we had to cut a few corners, you know, and do it rather quickly and whatnot, but we tried to, you know, keep that quality level high And I think we accomplished that. And the songs are really cool, man. I feel very happy about them. And I think people will dig what they hear as well. That album's coming out on Frontiers very soon. I don't know exactly when, but she's a Frontiers label, you know, mate as well. So she's I think she's done a few albums with Frontiers.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So, of course, just back to the Sweet Lynch record again. How would you define success now for something like that? Would it be the fact that you made it? Because, of course, CD sales aren't the same as what they used to be. So what would be your definition of success for that record?
I think success for me is just being able to still do what I do and being allowed to do it.
Okay.
The fact that I have a company, Frontiers, that believes in me and fans that believe in me, that's success to me.
Okay.
Because it's never going to be big numbers. I mean, unless a miracle happens.
Yeah. You just can't get the airplane out.
I'm selling records these days. I'm not going to go country to sell records. And I'm not, I mean, I love country.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I shouldn't say I'm not going to go country. Maybe I'll have a song that has country flavors someday that might do well. But I'll never be a country artist. That's not who I am. I'll never be a pop artist. That's not who I am.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll keep doing what I do. And I thank God that I can still do it. There's a lot of bands that can't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's been taken away from them for whatever reason, and they're working at, you know, sadly at Home Depot, or nothing against Home Depot, but you know what I mean? They're not able to fulfill their dreams, and I'm still able to, thank God, at the ripe old age of 51, you know, so
mm-hmm.
still going.
Yeah, so just one final question for me, Michael. I just want to ask you a question about your book. I thought it was a great read. Definitely lives up to the title. Any of the feedback on that surprise you?
Yeah, I mean, on both sides of the fence. I mean, I got some really positive feedback, and that surprised me, because I guess I was kind of setting myself up for the strong possibility of being dragged through the coals, because it was so brutally honest.
Mm.
And I felt like, okay, well, with honesty comes sometimes some lashings and, you know, negative feedback, and I kind of expected that, but at the same time, I did get that as well. And some of the comments that I heard wasn't at all what I thought they would be. Like, you know, I heard some comments about how I was rough on Tim, and I felt like, I mean, I devoted a whole chapter to Tim about being one of my biggest regrets, not letting him or allowing him to plan To Hell with the Devil, and I felt like, wait a second, I wasn't rough on Tim at all. I guess when you write a book, an autobiography, and you pour out your heart and soul, you're going to open that door to getting good and bad comments, and I certainly did.
I think with a book like that, you're bearing your soul, but you don't know the person who's reading the book. You don't know how they're going to react to it.
Right.
I think with, you know, it's a bit more personal than the music, because all you got is the lyrics. With a book, you've got your life story. So, and the one thing I did really enjoy about your book was You went very personal about your own life, and a lot of the musicians, all they'll talk about is the bands they were in. So that, I thought that was very, very refreshing. I really appreciated that part of the book.
Well, good, man. I definitely wanted to, you know, pour out my soul, but yet at the same time do something different. And, you know, I purposely didn't talk about my kids, for example. A lot of people ask me, why didn't you get into your kids and how they are and who they are and stuff? And I just felt like, well, I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
I wanted to keep their life somewhat private. And, you know, it was a tough thing to do. I mean, that book was not easy to write. I mean, I had to rewrite and rewrite and rewrite, and it took a long, long time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff I didn't talk about. I guess that's book number two. But you know what? I just wanted people, I wanted to come right out and say, look, this is who I am. With all of my flaws, might upset you to hear the truth and to hear that all of us have flaws, everyone in the band. I mean, if you walked in our shoes and traveled with us and toured with us, you might be appalled. You know, if you saw Tim, you know, smoke a pack of cigarettes and drink a six-pack of beer, you might walk away thinking, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I thought they were Christians.
Yeah. Well, we actually spoke to Tom Werman about 5 or 6 months ago, and I asked him about the Against the Law record.
Yeah.
And he said he had a great time making it with you guys, that he was sorry that it wasn't bigger than, he couldn't help make it bigger than he wanted it to.
Well, you know what? Tom's a great guy, man, and that's that we had a great time with Tom. And that was a real difficult time with us, because that's really when we were on the rebellious side. And Tom saw that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of drinking going on that album. And it's not that drinking is a sin. It's just that when you go from, you know, saying one thing for 20 years or 15 years or however long it was, and then you do the complete opposite, and you know, you're basically, you know, exemplifying the definition of hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we were doing. I talk about all that in the book and, you know, get into that. But I guess the moral of the story is this. I mean, we're sinners, you know. We have issues. We have problems. We're not perfect. And I think sometimes people, or many times people, put us on pedestals and expect us to be.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, Michael, I really appreciate you taking some time out of your night to talk to us. Do you have any websites or Facebook pages you want to promote?
No, just my Twitter. I've got my Twitter and my Facebook, which is, you know, the Michael Sweet Facebook, and my Twitter is Michael H. Sweet. And I'm on there all the time, man. I'm always updating people and always posting stuff and trying to keep everyone informed.
Yeah, well, I have to say, Michael, you're very honest on Facebook too, because I follow you on Facebook.
I'll be careful then what I say.
No, you're fine. You're fine. All right. Well. Thanks for taking some time out tonight to talk to us. And hopefully I'll see you on the road with George and Richard at some stage.
Yes, sir. Hey, buddy. Take care and thank you for your time. Okay.
No problem, Michael. All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Go our talk with Michael Sweet of Sweet and Lynch, and also Striper and whatever else he feels like doing this week. We managed to play a couple of tracks in there from the brand new Sweet and Lynch album. Of course, the first one we played was the title track, Only to Rise. And then in the middle of that interview, we actually played a Striper track off of their last album. The name of that track is Sticks and Stones. And then the last track we just finished playing is the one that Richie had said is his favorite track on the album. Talked about it earlier in the interview. That one is called Dying Rose. So if you're digging any of that stuff, I would urge you to go out there and pick up that album. Also, you could go up to pledgemusic.com and look up Sweet and Lynch. And I still think they have bundles and things up there that you can get as well. Pretty cool stuff. So you might want to check that out too. So this week, for no apparent reason, I feel like playing a little bit of Shotgun Messiah, one of my favorite tracks off of their album, Second Coming. That would be Heartbreak Boulevard. We'll be right back.
girl, not a mask anymore. You know the touch of hers made my heart beat like it never did before.
This is Ada from Voices of Destiny, and you're listening to Focus on Metal.
Ada, of course, is Ada Fleckner, the brand new vocalist of Voices of Destiny. I've got to tell you that Massacre Records has been on fire like the last 6 months with the stuff they have been putting out. It is so cool to see that label back in such full force. Every time I turn around, they just seem to be putting out one more cool metal album, and this new one from Voices of Destiny is no exception. So I don't know how much folks know about Voices of Destiny. If you're not into symphonic power metal, then this is a band that might have passed you by, but they have been around for a while, been around since 2004, and this new one, Crisis Cult Out on Massacre, is actually their third full-length album. They had a demo they did in 2007 called Red Winter's Snow, then they did an EP called Dare to Reach in 2009, From the Ashes in 2010, Power Dive in 2012, and now 2 years later they have Crisis Cult, and this time they have Ada Fleckner in the driver's seat for vocals. So just like I said, this is definitely symphonic power metal. Some cool stuff going on here with her clean vocals, and then you have some cookie vocals that kind of come in and out as well, gives it some texture. But definitely this is a band that is dyed-in-the-wool symphonic power metal. So I had a really great talk with Ada, and actually I talked to her, it must have been like 4 weeks ago now or something like that. When I did this one, my voice was still all screwed up from being sick, and you will definitely hear it as soon as I open my mouth on the interview. So that ought to tell you kind of the time frame of when I actually did this interview. The chance to run this particular chat just seemed to keep getting pushed out. So finally this week I get a chance to run this one. Like I said, great talk I had with her. Really cool person to talk to. Interesting story about how she got in the band. Really enjoyed that. And, you know, we talked a lot about the direction of the band, where they're going and stuff. And she was very open about what she liked and didn't like with the band and about the direction they want to go in and all that. Like I said, just a really cool person to talk to. So, you know, in that sense, I feel bad that it's taken this long for me to finally get a spot to actually run this interview. And also during this, I will give you a couple samples of the new album Crisis Cult as well. Give you a taste for it. You can decide whether it's something that's for you or not. There's a lot going on in these songs. There's layers of instruments, layers of vocals. You know, if I had one pet peeve overall on the album, it's really the same thing that bothered me about the last Iron Maiden release. Then that was that just every song had this long intro. And I know that it with symphonic stuff, you tend to have some of that. But also most symphonic metal bands will have shorter cut to the chase songs as well. This one, they seem to develop a lot of the intros to every song as well. That was the thing that drove me crazy about the Iron Maiden one, that, you know, when I went back and revisited it again and just kind of ignored all the long intro, the songs really kicked ass. And that's probably the only thing I have about this album that really starts to bug me, is that every song tends to have this long intro. Again, I understand it's the, you know, type of music that they're trying to do as well. I just wish they had a few more that had just right in their stuff, because there's some great rhythm going on in here, a lot of good music happening, definitely some great vocals. But far be it for me to decide what's good and what isn't. I will let you guys be the judge. And of course, if you do like the band and you want to find out more about them, you can go to facebook.com/voicesofdestiny, or they also have their website, voices-of-destiny.com. They do have a Twitter. Otter and I talked a little bit about that. I don't think that made the interview, but they really don't use Twitter all that much. So she always says the best way to do it is to go to the Facebook page, always interacting there. So if you're digging it, then I would definitely go facebook.com/voicesofdestiny. So why don't we dive into my chat with Otter Fleckner of Voices of Destiny.
All right, listeners, in my ever-evolving quest to bring you guys great bands that you may or may not have heard of course, there's a great band out of Germany called Voices of Destiny. They've had two albums out, and 2014 brings their third album out called Crisis Cult, and that also brought over a change in lead vocalist, and that would be with Ada. And I have her on the line with us today to talk about the brand new Voices of Destiny release, Crisis Count. How are we doing today?
I'm doing pretty fine, thank you.
Awesome. So it's interesting, they talk about you as kind of the new change in the band, but they don't seem to also mention that this is also Klaus's first album on drums as well, right?
Yes, it's his first time. But of course, for listeners, you don't really hear that at first.
I guess so. Yeah, you're so, it's always the big shoes to fill, and that's come up to you. And I have to say that you've done an amazing job with all of this stuff, and also the fact that, you know, not only coming out with this album with this band, but also going ahead and doing that duet with Manuela Crowler as well. I thought that's, not only being the new vocalist, but taking on that kind of a duet too. I thought that was a pretty amazing job by you.
Yes, thank you. It's been a challenge, but I think I managed it.
I think you excelled at it. So really, really good stuff. So I know that you did some initially some backing vocals on some prior releases with them, correct?
Yes, I did.
And is that what made them comfortable with what you could do and made you their choice in bringing you in the band?
I think that was part of the reason, yeah. I've known that guys for quite a long time.
Okay.
Because my ex-boyfriend has been the former drummer of Voices of Destiny. And that's why I knew those guys. And we've been friends for years. And we've had barbecues together and parties and everything. So I knew the guys. And one day I read on Facebook that they had separated from their singer. And actually, I hoped that they would ask me to to come up next. And I was really surprised that a couple of days later they did. And I said yes immediately.
That's awesome. I love when I hear really cool stories about changes in bands. And of course, for something like that, too, it's nice that, you know, obviously they knew it was somebody they knew they could work with, and the trust was already there. So, but that's a really cool story. You know, it's either that kind of story, or you hear the, oh, I was a friend of the band, I always hung out, and one day they just asked me, hey, could you sing? And I did, and they went, holy crap, you really can. And those kind of stories, I love to hear about that stuff. So it's, and really, I mean, it's a fantastic job you've done on here. And it just seemed to fit in so well with what they do.
Yes, and I really, I like their music from the very beginning. And I've been with another band, Coronatus. It's also from Germany. And they did not the music that I would listen to privately. But still, I was a part of the band, and I did it, and it was fun as well. But I was really glad when I joined Voices of Destiny that I was finally doing the music that I wanted to do.
It's really cool that if people listen to this as well, and I urge everybody to go out and get Crisis Cult, that you actually do carry off a lot of different vocal stylings in here as well, you know, between kind of the really slow melodic stuff and the fast driving things. And your vocals just cover every facet of it and do it so well.
Thank you. I'm really trying to.
So when you, you know, when you were doing this, you know, listening to everything you're singing really brings to mind my question of, did you have a large part in writing the vocals, you know, the lyrics that you're singing?
I did not have a part in writing the lyrics, but I did have a part in writing the vocal lines, partly. Lucas, our keyboard player, he's writing most of the songs and all of the vocal lines, and most of them were already done when I joined the band, but I still had a part in rewriting them, looking if they fit to my voice, if it's the best thing I could sing, or if we could just adjust them to what I could do best.
Right, yeah.
So I had a little part in writing the vocal lines, and I did have a part in writing one song, which is the bonus track on the limited edition called Your Creation.
Right, yeah, and that's one of those ones where I talk about you being able to do those really slow melodic ones, and you really hear that on that track.
That is my song, yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting when you talk about singers that come into bands and whether or not they have, you know, lyrical input, because people can write lyrics and stuff, but it's always that, you know, it's your voice, and you have to know when you need to breathe and, you know, which vowels you can do without and all of that. So it really, I think people don't understand how it's really important that the vocalists be vested in the words they're doing.
Yes, I think Lucas has done really great in writing things for me, because even before he really knew what I could sing, he was he had written them, and most of them was fitting. Mm-hmm. I was really surprised by that, but that's probably because he's doing the guttural vocals.
Yeah,
and that's probably why he already knows what you can do as a singer and what you can't.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's true with the guttural vocals. It's always that that deep breath, go for it and pray for the spot to get the next deep breath and do it.
Yes.
So, yeah. And, you know, it's also, I think, important because, you know, you guys have also been known as a really good live band as well. So it's not just like you're going in the studio and you can pull it off there, but the fact that, you know, you can do it live as well.
Yes, we're working on that. We will have a great rehearsing weekend next week and we'll check out if we can do it.
Yeah, that's definitely awesome, and the fact that it just seems like you fit in so well on it. And are you like getting really psyched up to be able to go out and play a lot of this stuff live?
Yes, I really want to. We're really we're planning to do a tour next year. It's just a matter of time and a matter of money.
Right. Oh yeah, no, I hear you.
Yeah, but that's our plan.
Okay. If you guys started looking at the set list, you're looking at maybe doing a few things from the Ashes and Power Dive as well, or are you going to really concentrate on the new one?
No, we will do also From the Ashes and Power Dive songs. If you hold on for a sec, I can even tell you, because today I received an email with a couple of songs. It's like, for example, Not the One or Power Dive, Return from the Ashes and All Eyes on Me. That songs we're playing to do live.
Oh, awesome. That's good. So you get, at least you have a little bit of connection to some of the past ones as well. And
yes,
I think that helps slot some of the other fans to realize that, you know, wow, you can do the old stuff, the new stuff, and, you know, they can really get behind you as the new vocalist. So that's great.
Yes, right.
Yeah. And it's also really nice that you guys have stayed with Andy Horn doing, you know, the production stuff as well. It seems like you guys have a great relationship with him, and you continue to just do album after album with him.
Yeah, he's awesome, and he's really done an awesome job in mixing the album, and of course in recording the vocals for my part. Because when I entered the studio, I thought, yes, we will be done pretty fast, because I'm used to singing in a studio. I've done that before, and it will be easy. But it was not so easy working with him, because he's really picky. But that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And in the end, the outcome is the most important thing. So it was good that he was so picky, and that he always said, okay, you can try it once again. You can do it better. And he was right. I could do it better sometimes.
Yeah. It's good that you have a producer like that has worked with other female vocalists doing this kind of style of stuff, you know, with, you know, we work with Liv Christine and stuff as well. So it's nice that he knows how to work with people and not overextend people either on a session. So that's good.
Yeah, that's good.
And it was also, I thought, really neat that you guys were using an unknown artist to do your cover artwork and another unknown person to do photos and stuff. And the cover artwork is definitely a really awesome piece of artwork.
Yes, it is. It's a friend of our bass man, actually.
Yeah.
He's called Sua, and he's an art student. And we were just sitting down one night telling him what we wanted to have. And a couple of weeks later, he was handing in a sketch in black and white. And we just said, okay, just do it in color and a little more details, and we'll just take it.
Wow. It's really well done. I like that, even though it's, you know, it's a painting and stuff, but it has a kind of a three-dimensional feel that's kind of to it, with the layers between the background, you know, on the figure and the flames in the front. It has just a nice effect, and it draws you in and makes you kind of want to keep looking at the cover for a while.
Yeah, we have a digital one, which is blinking. The fire is blinking. That's awesome.
Oh, that's nice. So, all right, now I'm going to have to go get a version so I can have that. That's cool. No, that's great. It also, I think, is kind of reflective of a lot of the German metal bands and the kind of cover artwork they do as well. So it's just kind of a nice reflection of the scene itself with this kind of artwork.
Yeah, that's nice to hear.
Nice and rewarding experience so far being in the band?
Yes, yeah. Definitely. The guys are awesome. They really worked me in very well, and they gave me also freedom to do what I think I could do and freedom to sing the way I wanted to. And it was what I wanted and what they wanted, so in the end, we're all fine with it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And, you know, it sounds like you're very comfortable with it too, which is great to hear. You know, sometimes, you know, I talk to people that are recently in bands and they're like, yeah, this is great. But you kind of hear this thing in the voice of they're still trying to fit in. But you really sound like someone you almost sound like you've been in the band for years. Maybe that's from hanging out with them for so long.
Yeah, I think that's why it feels like being in the band for such a long time, because I know them. I've known them for 10 years now, I think, almost. Yeah. That's really long.
Yeah.
God damn it.
it is. It definitely is. And now, you know, we talked about touring, and, you know, I know that initially you guys, if you do anything, it's probably going to be over in Europe, right? I mean, it's just to be able to tour outside of Europe right now for you is probably just prohibitively expensive.
It's very expensive. I remember with another band, I've had the opportunity to tour in South America.
Mm.
But we did not do it because the record label did not really support us. And they also said it would be too dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. But, well, maybe we would have one day the opportunity to come to the U.S. So,
yeah. You know, you guys would probably do very well at Prague Power. And, you know, definitely when I talk to a lot of bands from Germany, that seems to be their one stop in the U.S. is they get enough funds together to go over, hit Atlanta for that, you know, that one festival, and mm-hmm. at least capture, a good new chunk of fans as well. And you guys would definitely go over so well there.
Prague Power. I think I'll just write that down.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah, that annual festival down in Atlanta, and it seems like that's the one that when I talk to like Seed from Ornogan, that's like mm-hmm. the one that we're really we'll do Prague Power, and that's probably about it because you just kind of have the pockets. I know in the States, as much as we try to get a lot of this style of music heard from everybody, it really does. I know ultimately and realistically become like pockets of people that really love this. And then other people that just, they're just not really their thing. But it seems like that's the one big payday for any band coming over here. If they can pick one date, it seems to be Prague Power.
All right. I'll just tell the others and we'll look for it.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So, you know, going through all of them, and I know I ask this question to everybody and everyone, of course, goes, well, they're all my babies, but I have to ask, what do you think's your favorite song off the new one?
My favorite song is Storm Crow.
Mm.
First of all, because of the title. I don't know, I just love it. And I think it's something different that we've done with that song. We have some electronic influences in there, and I'm singing a different style.
Mm.
It's something between singing and shouting, but like shouting like a girl, of course.
Right.
And I think it turned out really, really well. It was an experiment, but it's good.
That's pretty late in the album, too. You know, that's way down into, if it was an actual proper album, it'd be like, you know, probably song two on side B. So it's right in there as well. But
yes.
Yeah, it's definitely a good track. And, you know, going back to what I said before, it's one of these ones, again, that shows that you're not a one-trick pony, then you can do a lot of stuff. And, you know, I think when I talk to a lot of metal fans and I try to get them into a lot of this kind of metal, a lot of times their comment to me is that, well, I know I like the guitars or I like the driving bass or the drums, but the vocalist, they always come back and go, well, she sounds the same for song to song to song. And to me, this is a great one to show people because I can say, go ahead, I challenge you to tell me that about the Voices of Destiny, because you can't. You it's really not this thing of, oh, it sounds like how she sounded in the last song with different words. You know, it really does have this really great thing of each song captures your imagination in a different way. And it's great. I love when bands do this.
Thank you. That's really great to hear.
Yeah. So, you know, how do you end up keeping your voice in shape? Do you do anything special, or are you just one of these gifted peoples that just kind of goes, nope, I don't know how I do it, I just do it?
Actually, I just do it. I mean, I've had singing lessons, and I learned how to work with it, how to sing in different styles. That's really what I learned. Mm. But actually, I don't have any special tips or something that you have to do. I mean, I'm working at a radio station myself.
Mm.
So I use my voice every day.
Right.
But on the other hand, I'm smoking and drinking. So, well, maybe I'm just one of those lucky people.
I guess so. Yeah. Because, I know that even when I used to front a band, I would have to watch, you know, what I drank before a show. I mean, definitely something like milk was absolutely 100%.
Yeah, that's a no-go.
That was going to kill it. Even things like soda and stuff, it was like, nope, couldn't do that.
Yeah, that's not good. No Coke.
Yep.
No juice.
Yeah, people thought I was a little bit insane about it, but it's like, no, even in like an hour or so before it, you could just have a horrible show, and it was just because of a stupid glass of milk or something. But fortunately, beer never had that effect, so that was a good thing.
Yes, beer is fine. I found out as well.
In fact, I was recording next week's show. I was doing all the voiceovers last night, and to try to make it through, that was my thing, as it was my beer is cough medicine night, and it seemed to make me be able to do the show, so that was good.
That sounds good.
No, that's awesome. As far as your you know, your fan base and your feedback so far, you know, people getting really excited about this, about the new album?
Yes, they do. I think the response has been really positive so far.
Mm.
From the media, from fans on Facebook. Those are the only fans I've met so far since our release. Well, there's only been like one or two reviews where the people write that they don't like my voice, or where they write that what we do is what every female fronted metal band is doing, what I think is wrong.
Those people drive me crazy. It seems like they have complaints, but then when you ask them, well, what would you do different? And they don't have any answers.
They don't have answers. And if you ask them, what's your favorite music? They say black metal. Well, yeah, then I can't help you.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah, it does drive me crazy. I read those things, and you even wonder sometimes, do they even really listen to the album?
Yeah.
Or do they listen to it already not liking it right from the get-go? And that's, if you're going to do that, then why even do the review?
Yeah, that's what I think too.
I just think it's, you know, we've kind of got this small community, and why'd be divisive about it? If it's, hey, no problem. If you like the other side of the fence, be great. You know, more power to you. I won't review a black metal album, but I do have a guy on staff who really likes black metal and death metal, and he does all those reviews for us because he's got a valid, you know, voice on them. So I won't do them, but he'll do them. So, you know, you talked about social media, and of course, whenever we do interviews, we love to let people know what's the best way to find about the band and what's going on and keep up with you guys. So for people wanting to know online, you know, where to contact you guys or keep up with you, what's the best places to go?
The best place to go is Facebook, definitely. That's where we keep our fans updated.
Okay.
We have a Voice of Destiny fan book site. I have an Ada Flechner Facebook website. But actually, I'm just sharing the Voices of Destiny posts, so there's not really anything new for me, because all that I'm doing is for Voices of Destiny, actually. We also have a website, which is it's got a pretty nice design. But if you're going for info, it's just go on Facebook.
So before I let you go, if you had to pick any one song off of the album to play as a good example, would it be Stormcrow?
No.
No?
Stormcrow is not a typical Voices of Destiny song. It's a new direction we're heading to.
Uh-huh.
I think maybe also on our next album we could do more of that songs because we all like it pretty much. And a typical Voices of Destiny song, I think, is Wolfpack.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that actually is a pretty cool one. Awesome. All right. It's been great to get to talk to you and, you know, get the word out about this great new album and hopefully get you guys some more listeners. And for people that have been followers of you, maybe that don't know you've got a new one out, that we can get the word out as well. And it's really cool that, you know, Massacre, being a really, you know, rooted longtime metal label, has kind of come back and they're signing some great bands again. And it's also neat that you guys have actually been with them since what, like 2009?
And, yes.
So that's great. You know, they're well vested in you guys as well in promoting as well. So, you know, I wish you guys a ton of luck with the new album, and we will absolutely our best to promote it and let everybody know about it.
Thank you very much.
Awesome.
Really appreciate that you like it that much. It's good to hear. Then in the end, you know what you've been doing it for.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. I will. I'll let you go.
All right. Have a nice day.
You too.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
So let's wrap up this talk with Ada Flechter of Voices of Destiny with what she considers to be a song very indicative of the style of the band from Voices of Destiny's latest release on Massacre Records. It's out right now, folks. Go get yourself a copy. This is track 2 off Crisis Cult. As Ada said, this one is Wolfpack. So that will do it for this week. Thanks again, Richie, for getting that set up. It was cool to have Michael on once again. Seems like we've got a couple of people that seem to be regular guests, which is pretty cool.
Well, with Michael, he's had so much out. I was hoping to get him on for the book.
Yeah.
I was hoping to get him because he was doing the book and the solo album. I don't know if he was doing a lot of media for the live album, because live albums these days,
right,
they're not as big a deal as they used to be. And I was offered him for this, right. And I jumped at it. I said, yeah, I'd love to have Michael back on.
Yeah, you turned that one around pretty quick. So,
yeah.
So you know, thanks for taking care of that, getting that all set up. I appreciate it. And any words?
No words.
No words.
More interviews in the can.
Yeah.
Project still to run.
Yep.
I think that's nearly finished. Except for one guy. Hopefully we'll get him on, but that's
the
guy. Future. That guy, yeah.
All right. Well, as I always say, keep up with us at focusonmetal.net, focusonmetal.blogspot.com, twitter.com/focusonmetal. And you could always fire off emails to richie@focusonmetal.net or scott@focusonmetal.net. So that will do it for this week. We'll talk to you again next week. And until then, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.